Sweat Technique.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, I thought of this question the other day. I think I was in the shower, actually. 713-780-3776, TMI. D'Amico Ryans or Ime Udoka? Who is the better coach? And let's set the record, because I'm already seeing some people here. Why are we comparing them? Like, why are we even talking about this? Blah, blah, blah. Because it's fun conversation. They are both very good. I don't want to speak for you. They are very, very good. We know that they are very, very good. I love D'Amico Ryans. I love Ime Udoka. I think Joe Espada is going to be a fantastic manager from a professional point of view in sports, professional sports point of view. We are in very good hands with who is leading the charge for their respective professional teams. I think D'Amico is a great hire. Happy they got D'Amico. Wasn't my first choice. Ben Johnson was. I take that back. D'Amico is the perfect guy for this football team. Love that we have him. Same thing with Ime Udoka. Ime Udoka was on our top list before they even went into the coaching search, and we didn't believe it was going to happen because we felt it was far-fetched. They made it happen. So let's let the record show we think both of these coaches are fantastic, and the Rockets and the Texans are very fortunate to have both guys.
Thanks.
Which one is better relative to the sport, though? Ime Udoka, basketball, NBA. D'Amico Ryans, football, NFL. Which one, relative to their sport, is the better head coach?
That's a hell of a question.
Thank you.
Because I think that when you think about this as a Houston sports fan, you won the lottery twice because you got the best available NBA coach in the offseason you needed a coach. And after two absolute debacles with the Texans, you got the best available coach that was available to you for the perfect situation, as you mentioned, for the perfect situation for what you were dealing with. They both turned franchises around. That's why I've always said, when I always harp on, these are two mirror image franchises. It's crazy how close they followed each other with all the like scenarios and situations they've dealt with. And now you've got two of the premier young coaches in your sport. To me, what separates the two of them is the ability to connect and motivate from a guy like you have with D'Amico versus the skin on the wall already of an Udoka who takes a team to the finals and loses, but has already taken a young team and taken them almost over the top to where he's got that kind of experience. But other than that, it's a really tough call. I would say that I lean towards the experience of a guy like Udoka because of the fact that they were both taking over complete bleep shows that they had to try and turn around. And it was unbelievable what they've been able to do. I'm going to lean Udoka just because of his experience as a head coach and the years he's had it. Kind of, he's already been through all these things as the number one guy. Not that, again, to your point, I'm not taking anything away from D'Amico, and he'll probably get there. But if I had to pick one or the other, I'm going to take a guy that's gone further and has had more years doing it.
Let me get to my pros and cons list.
Okay.
Starting with Ime Udoka. You mentioned, now he hasn't done it for a lot longer. He's only been a head coach in two seasons with two different teams because he's a dirty dog off the floor. He went to the NBA Finals. Now, the team was good, obviously. You have to have a good team. You have to have a good roster to get there. But he did it. He went to the NBA Finals in Boston. He took over a really bad situation. Because I think when you look at D'Amico, he took over a bad situation. Okay, I get it.
Come on, here.
Credit there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ime took over a really bad situation with the Rockets. A team that had won like 20-something games with 2-3 years in a row. And terrible culture. Like, they were playing AAU basketball. They had no clue, the guys who were holdovers, how to play winning ball at the professional level.
No discipline.
And Ime Udoka has them at a 500 record, and they're one game behind the play-in. So those are the pros for Ime Udoka. The culture that he's built, taking over a team that was going nowhere and going nowhere fast, and they are one game back of a play-in, and you can see the strides and the player development and all of that. And then, of course, Boston, he did go to the NBA Finals. D'Amico Ryans, we have the 1 year to work off of. And I would say a lot of the things that Ime has done with the Rockets in his 1 year with the Rockets, same thing with D'Amico Ryans. D'Amico Ryans turned the NFL laughingstock into an NFL playoff team. They won the AFC South. He rebuilt the culture. Players want to play in Houston now. And you talked about that too, like these free agents. They see what the Texans are building and the leadership of D'Amico Ryans, and they're going to want to be part of that. But other than just the culture, he's also produced. He turned in a team that had won 11 games in the previous 3 years into a playoff contender. Both of them have really good players, like young players. The Texans have C.J. Stroud. They have the quarterback. The Rockets had Alpi Shingun, who was a borderline all-star, didn't make it. And now Jalen Green's playing really good. Because Ime has the year prior to Houston where he took Boston to the finals, I don't know how you could go D'Amico Ryans over Ime Udoka. But both are fantastic options,
that,
obviously.
That's the one thing that puts me on one side or the other. Otherwise, it's a really neck-and-neck race because of the fact that you know that it's not ending here. Like it's going to be I think it's going to be an even better evaluation when both guys are done with their careers here to look back on it, because I think both have the potential of getting to multiple finals and Super Bowls. Both have the potential to do so much. But the fact is that one thing I would ask you guys is it basketball or football that the coach means more?
I would go football.
I think it's football as well.
Professional football over professional basketball.
I think it is. So I think that...
That's pro. That's a pro for D'Amico.
I was going to say, so that's a little nudge D'Amico's way. But at the end of the day, we all know winning is what everybody's worried about and to what level you've gotten. And the fact that Udoka was a guy that took a team to the finals. Now, the Boston situation, as much as there was talent there, similar to the Rockets, it was young talent that was running amok. It was tough to control. They didn't understand. No one understood how they were going to get everybody to get on the same page. He got them there. And then, like you said, off the floor, he was his own worst enemy. He created his demise. The situations that each guy walked into for their respective professions, no one, I would wish that on anyone in coaching, because they were dead. They were brutal. We thought it was going to take years. In both situations, feathered in the cap for both guys, the way they were able to turn it around and the short time it took is remarkable.
Yeah. Do you want to know one area where I don't want to say that I'm dinging D'Amico? And this is, like, again, they're both great coaches. Like, I'm not trying to ding either one of these guys, but whenever you are, nitpicking both guys to try to figure out which one is the best, do you ding D'Amico for having the quarterback? Because if D'Amico doesn't have the quarterback, we might be singing a much different tune.
You stole my argument. Yeah, because there have been other coaches who we wouldn't have nearly as high praise for in the NFL, like a Chuck Pagano with the Colts, who inherited Andrew Luck and certainly first 3 years in the league. Now, first year, he obviously didn't coach most of the year. But first 3 years in the league, he's 11-5. I mean, you get the quarterback, and even if you're maybe a below-average head coach, if you get the quarterback, you're going to have a chance to have a pretty good record. Now, that's not a slander on D'Amico, because I also think he happens to be a good coach in addition to having the quarterback. But there's no singular position in sports that can affect the team overall like a quarterback can. Maybe the NBA star, but yeah. The Rockets didn't have the LeBron James that you could then equivalate to an NFL quarterback.
Quarterback's the single most important position in sports. So we've said that. The one thing that I thought you were going to throw out is, when you're the head coach in the NFL, even though D'Amico coaches the defense, you have a coordinator on either side that does a lot of the kind of offense, defense, and those kind of coaching moves. Whereas when you're Udoka, you're doing everything. You're doing the offense, you're doing the defense, you're doing the team psychologist, you're doing the disciplining, you're doing all those things. D'Amico does some of those things, but I think you do more of it as a head coach in the NBA. But again, not to ding either one of them, because the sports also dictate what's required of you differently in both sports.
Would you give either one of them a bonus for having to deal with, I guess, less than at the GM position than the other? Because I don't know who you would take, between the two GMs. I would take Nick Caserio. I know where Joel leans on this. I guess I didn't have to ask that question. But if you would lead Nick Caserio as the better GM, and I would, then I think that's also a feather in Udoka's cap that he's overcoming more.
I would give Caserio the edge over Stone. Now,
first of all, as much as I have a lot of reasons to crap on Rafael Stone, the biggest thing is experience. If we're going to talk about just like Udoka gets it because of the championships, Rafael came into this job with zero experience except for the fact that he shadowed Morey for a year, whereas Caserio has had now years of experience before he got to D'Amico.
Now, to defend Stone, I don't think that he's made catastrophically poor moves, though.
I think he's dodged some bullets that were there.
Maybe, but I deal in actualities.
You're right.
Like, what is the worst thing that Rafael Stone has done? Like, I think here's a hot take. Rafael Stone's worst move is less impactful than Nick Caserio's worst move.
What is Nick Caserio's worst move?
Drafting Kenyon, trading down and then selecting Kenyon Green.
That's fair.
What's the worst thing that Stone has done?
There's a couple. I mean, the first one is the entire KPJ situation.
Okay, but that didn't really hurt you on the court.
It kind of did, because he was pushing for him to be the man, and he was pushing for him to be the starting point guard. But from a draft capital and getting out of it because of the legalities, like, you escaped it.
You're fine. Like, you're fine now. Like, that wasn't – and you didn't – you traded a second rounder that was, like, super conditional. You didn't lose anything. Right. Like, you didn't have the opportunity cost of a lottery pick. Like, and look, maybe Kenyon Green can change the story for Casario, and certainly rooting for him. You know, to Aggie and Atascocita Eagles, somebody we brought into our show.
They got out of it, too, with Kenyon Green, because it didn't prevent them from playing, you know, obviously reaching 10 wins and winning the division.
Yeah, but you didn't get Kyle Hamilton. KPJ didn't prevent you from getting somebody else.
Okay, so if it wasn't
drafting
KPJ,
Kenyon Green prevented you from getting Kyle Hamilton.
Is it the four or five first-round picks that you basically didn't get anything out of and threw away?
Yeah, but... Maybe. I don't think that – probably. Maybe.
I'm trying to think of,
but
like, what
would
the –
that's not as significant as Kenyon Green.
That equal, what would be the one thing that we'd say, that's the worst move Casario made? That's the worst move that Stone made. I don't know which one.
Yeah, it's hard to point out maybe a singular move for Stone as compared to Casario. But, I mean, if we're going to make the point that Stone's worst moves didn't actually impact the rebuild, then I think you could say the same thing for Casario, because Kenyon Green, to this point – you know, once D'Amico come in, that failure has not impacted the Texans all that much.
But it's hurt your personnel. Like, I see what you're saying, because they still were able to produce and win the division and all that, but we're in free agency right now, and we're like, yeah, the Texans can use an upgrade at left guard. We're not really saying that because of the departure of Kevin Porter Jr. We're not like, well, because KPJ is gone, you missed out on having one of these guys as one of your starting five, or the late first rounders. Like, we could probably pull up the draft and find guys who were drafted after them that would really help out, but I don't think they even cracked the starting five, per se. Whereas Kyle Hamilton, you're talking about having, like, a really dynamic defense.
Yeah, even like wrapping up guys before that they needed to be wrapped up or signed contracts to. Look, I don't think that there's anything that's been like handcuffing the franchise because of something he's done to date. Dylan Brooks, as much as I think he was grossly overpaid for the amount of years and money you gave him, but he's still, it's like he's not Kenyon Green, right? He's productive.
Yeah.
He's doing things for you.
Now, in contrast, you could say that Rafael Stone has not done anything as good as Nick Casario. Like, okay, well, you drafted Stroud at number two.
Right?
Some people thought it wouldn't be Stroud. And then also the trade up to three.
Well, the closest thing he did was he traded to get Alpe.
Okay, that's a good one.
Yeah, he traded to get Alpe. And so regardless of the other things, the biggest feather in his cap was he made the move with Oklahoma City to get the extra first-round pick that gives you Alpe.
I wouldn't say that Alpe's, like, great move.
Oh, you're right. It's not as dominant as
CJ? I don't think it's as good as CJ. No. I don't even think it's as good as the trade-up for Will Anderson. And I was very critical of the trade-up for Will Anderson. I still think that they overspent to trade up to number three. But because you hit on the evaluation of Will Anderson, it makes that, you know, a moot point.
I think we have to see both careers play out, because Alpe looks like he might have a way higher ceiling than a lot of people thought.
You're kind of playing pretty good without him, though.
Yeah, but you are. But we also got to see what Will Anderson, if he continues on this progression, he does the same thing. So there's still plenty to kind of evaluate.
Well, Stroud's the clear-cut one.
Yeah, it has to be, because he is the single most important position in sports.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. That was a fun conversation. Stone, Casario, and then also, who is the better coach, Ime Udoka or D'Amico Ryan? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, a word for all the people that are golf fans out there, and I don't mean just watching it on TV. You love to play golf, and sometimes you want to play golf when it's too dark out or it's raining out, or you want to practice your game, and you can't find a course or a range or a spot where you can figure it all out. Now you can go to X Golf and Katy and figure it out just about any time of the day or night. You want to get some shots up in the – I mean, hit some shots and hit some range balls with your own golf ball, if you wish, on the best simulators I've ever seen, including putting and chipping. You got to go to X Golf and Katy, because if you go once, you're going to go multiple times. If you can't get a tee time you want to play, or it's raining and your tee time was canceled, go to X Golf and Katy, because these simulators are all world. It's like the best sports bar meets the best simulators, all under one roof. You're indoors, air conditioned. It's phenomenal. You and your buddies can play a full round of golf in half the time or less than it takes you to play a full round of golf out on the course. And then when you want to, you can practice and you can hone in, because everything that those simulators do, from charting the distance of the ball, the spin rate, the direction, everything about it is like real golf indoors, and it's absolutely phenomenal. Check them out today. Go to X Golf Katy online and see all the different ways and all the different specials that they have going, so that you can get your golf on, even if it's at night or even if it's in the morning. They are fantastic. Check them out today, X Golf Katy.
locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
He's Blank, I'm Branham. Who's a better coach, Ime Udoka or DeMeco Ryans? Again, we think both are fantastic. Keith from L.A., it's a great question. All right, thank you. 5044, Ryans makes playoffs first year. He gets my vote. Boston Celtics success means nothing in the H. Okay, I get how it means nothing in the H. Like, I don't care that Boston made the finals. I get that. That's a valid point. But when you're talking coaching chops, how are you not talking about the total resume, even if it's pre-Houston?
The big thing for me is we haven't seen the first year, even if you want to eliminate Boston, which I don't, and the experience that he has, we haven't even seen him play out his first year yet. He can make the playoffs, too. He can make the play-in and make the playoffs. He could do some things, too, to where Dick Willey asked me earlier, what would be the equivalent or where would we have to get to with Udoka to be able to equal what DeMeco did in his first year? I said, realistically, the more I thought about it, he'd have to get them into a series in the first round, which means you got to get through the play-in tournament, and then you can't get swept. You have to at least be competitive through the series, maybe take it to a final game or win or make it a competitive series to where you would say, whoa, from a team that won 22 games a year ago, that's a massive jump. But even still, you didn't win the division.
Yeah.
So it's hard to kind of surpass or see the Rockets surpassing year one with DeMeco.
So are you saying DeMeco?
No, I'm still saying because remember how that started? That the texture's taken out the Boston experience and the championship. I'm not. I just think that of the two guys, here's a guy that's been to a finals. Here's a guy that took a young team all the way to the finals. And then as good as both guys have done their jobs, I just think overall I give the slight edge to Udoka.
Yeah, I'm with you. 3367, great question. Thank you. I'm going to go with DeMeco for now since he got his team to the playoffs. Let's see what Ime does, though. That might change my mind. Something I'm noticing here is we're totally disqualifying Boston. Mm-hmm. Not you and I,
yeah, right.
But the reaction that we're getting.
That
I don't think that's fair.
Yeah,
I don't think you can do that.
Fair at all.
Like, if we're talking about the overall coaching chops of an individual, how do you eliminate previous stops from the individual?
Especially since Boston was year one and he reached the finals with a young team.
Are we going to disqualify DeMeco's, like, defensive coordinating with the 49ers? I don't think we would do that.
Well, so why are we disqualifying? You're going to take the resumes and say, did he learn what he learned from Shanahan and the Niners? And does that give him more credit than Udoka, who was groomed his whole life by Popovich, and then spent times with other teams that had in Brooklyn and Philly and teams like that where he got a lot more experience?
I think that's part of the process. I think it's part of the recipe. Why are you a great coach? Okay, well, for Ime, all the things you said. For DeMeco, well, Kyle Shanahan, playing the game, leader, captain, like that.
Played for Saban at Alabama.
That all adds to you being the coach
But who wins out in that regard?
Yeah, I would say I would give a slight edge to Ime.
I think Udoka wins because of the fact that he spent a good portion of time, you know, being tutored under the likes of Popovich.
He was a player with
guys.
Samson when he was an assistant at San Antonio too.
That's right.
So he's seen a lot of great coaches,
especially because of the exact two names. Now this it's going to feel like an unnecessary shot at Shanahan, but Shanahan obviously not won any Super Bowls, whereas Greg Popovich has won a ton of NBA titles.
Yeah, Shanahan. It's like one play from winning a Super Bowl twice.
I know. But specifically, if you're going to branch it out into a comparison of who they're under the learning trees of,
I'm cool.
Popovich is
learned from Saban, right? I mean, you're learning and spending.
No, he didn't.
He played for Saban at Alabama, didn't he?
He was pre-Saban.
Was he? Are you sure?
Yeah, I want to say that DeMeco's last year was the first year.
His last season was 2005, so I'm not sure.
He was 1 year before Saban, I believe.
I'm not sure when Saban got there, but I know.
I think that DeMeco's final year was the last year before Saban got there.
DeMeco's rookie year was 2006. His last year at Alabama would have been 2005, as you're looking it up.
Saban's first year was 2007.
Okay, so yeah, he would not have coached DeMeco.
I know that he didn't coach DeMeco because DeMeco's sometimes DeMeco's gotten that question and he's like, no, I didn't.
Okay, I wasn't aware of that.
So that would have been what?
So then who was this coach at Alabama?
I think it was Mike Shula.
It might have been Mike Shula.
That doesn't help the argument.
It might have been Mike Shula. There might have been another one in there. He might have played for more than one.
Alabama, before Nick Saban got there in the early 2000s, wasn't great. So.
Yeah. Yeah, he didn't play. He didn't play for Saban. 713-780-ESPN. 8458-5149. Tough questions. Yeah, and the Rockets are following his toughness, but you can make the same case. This is what's interesting about the conversation. I'm not going to say all. a lot of the points that you can make for one guy, you can also make for the other guy.
Absolutely.
And it's why they're both good coaches. Like, okay, change culture, leadership, the players respect them. They demand certain things, and all the players get the buy-in of those things. Like, they have a lot of similar characteristics, and a lot of those characteristics are what's needed to be a great coach, period. Tony 22, I believe that it is easier for a coach in the NBA to get a job than a coach in the NFL. Many reasons for believing this is it seems like it's harder to have a long tenure, sustained success in the NFL. Bill Belichick, even if you do, there's no guarantee you're going to get a job somewhere else. I disagree with this.
Just math, there's 30 jobs in the NBA, there's 32 in the NFL.
So. Well, I also disagree, unless you are a superstar player. You're a superstar player in the NBA. You can get a head job without any experience at all.
Yeah.
Unless you're that rare exception, you got to pay your dues for several years before you even consider for a head coaching.
They're willing to be a little bit more willy-nilly in the NBA with those head coaching jobs. Like you mentioned, the star player like a Steve Nash,
Isaiah Thomas. Jason Kidd.
Yeah, I remember Mike Miller being a name that was thrown. I never got it. But if you do that in the NFL, you're making stupid decisions that no one would ever do, like Josh McCown. Josh McCown.
Yeah, that too.
Like, Josh McCown's the equivalent to a Steve Nash, but you can get away with it in the NBA, but you can't in the NFL.
No,
so I would say the NBA head coaching jobs are a little bit more willy-nilly with who they give it out to. But if you're an assistant that's working your way up, I would say it's actually tougher.
See, Mario Elie. Mario Elie busted his tail as an assistant coach, earned the respect of everybody in the league. Unfortunately for him, not thinking about it at the time, his Mavericks went too far into the playoffs. And he missed the window where he was going to be a favorite for a lot of jobs that year, and they hired before he got done with the playoffs. He never sniffed a head coaching job again.
Yeah, Sam Cassell, same way, right?
Yeah, and Sam's still bouncing around as an assistant. I think he's back with Boston now. No, he's back with Boston after being in Philly.
He's never gotten the head coach job,
nope,
right?
Never.
I didn't think so. 6630, I don't know how you can say Adoka over D'Amico. He was a finalist and should have won Coach of the Year. No shade to Adoka, but D'Amico was a top three coach in the league this year, and I don't think Ime is that this year.
Did Ime win it when he was with Boston?
I think Ime's going to be a finalist for Coach of the Year.
For this year, but didn't he win it in Boston, too?
I don't know.
Close?
It wouldn't shock me
if he did. He doesn't have to. To match that, all he's got to do is what D'Amico did. If he finishes top three in Coach of the Year voting, then he's already done that.
That's what I'm saying. I think he's going to be there.
If the Rockets get into a play-in spot, he's certainly going to be considered as a top Coach of the Year candidate.
I don't even think they have to get into a play-in spot.
I mean, they've already surpassed their
Vegas. When you won 22 games a year ago and you're fighting for a play-in spot.
Yeah, their Vegas win projection this year was 31.5. They're at 35 now, and I think we all expect them to get to at least 38, 39 wins. So they're going to be way, way over their Vegas preseason total, much like the Texans. Again, a lot of the arguments you can make for D'Amico, you can also make for Udoka.
6856, who wins the championship first?
Ooh,
that's a great question.
I hate
too.
This question.
I know it's been brought up before.
I hate this
question. By the way, Adoka was fourth overall in the 2022 Coach of the Year voting.
And D'Amico was second.
Yeah. So I guess a slight advantage to.
Where does he may finish this
right,
year?
Right, but it could
I think he'll be top
year.
Three. Right, yeah. So he'll have two top fours.
If you eliminate Boston, then we don't know yet, but it could be a possibility that he wins it.
Well, yeah, but we're not eliminating Boston.
Right, no.
Who wins championship first?
I think the Texans do.
It'd be funny if they went in the same year because they've been following this same plight. I don't know. We're guessing.
It's the beauty of being able to hypothetically do what we do.
I want to watch the process.
I'm going to enjoy the hell out of the process.
Wait, now you're not willing to give an opinion?
It's not an opinion. It's a guess.
Okay, that's what opinions are. They are guesses.
No, opinions more reactionary. A guess is more trying to predict.
I think I'm more
in the react business than the prediction business.
Look, the way we know Alpi's been playing great all year, and then now he's hurt. We know Jalen Green's showing the glimpses we wanted to see more of when he got drafted. But unequivocally, you know who your superstar is on the offensive for the Texans, and you might have your superstar on defense right behind him already, and it's clear cut. It's cut and dried. Which is, I think, where you're still trying to figure it out. Well, why we want to still see this team play so well the rest of the season is trying to figure out what you don't know.
Yeah, gun to my head, I would take the Texans because of Stroud.
Mm-hmm.
I love Jalen Green. I don't think Jalen Green is the best player in an NBA team is quite where Stroud is relative to the quarterback. Now, you do throw in like the Pat Mahomes factor, too. That makes it. That's why it's so difficult to answer. 504, what's that?
There's another great question.
Go for it.
The other great question on the flip side of this. Who's the worst head coach for Houston sports in recent history? Because the texter says Culley.
Let's do that tomorrow.
And you could go Steven Silas right behind
Steven Silas versus David Culley.
Let's not give that away. Let's not give away that content. What was the question? Who was the worst?
Who's the worst coach in recent history For a Houston, Houston sports history.
Make sure you're listening to the Killer Bees tomorrow.
There you
from
go.
3 to 6 on
Thank
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN
92.7.
We'll take segments from anywhere. We're not ashamed. 5044, when the Rockets win the division or get in the playoffs, the conversation would change in favor of the Rockets coach. Texans got there. DeMeco gets the vote today, in my opinion, but totally understand Joel's argument. So, again, we're dismissing Boston, which we have a problem with. 0974, this is one that I find interesting because, like, we've gotten hundreds of texts on this in a matter of minutes. So we don't know what we were saying exactly whenever this text came in. Mm-hmm. The biggest issue is how he managed the whole team. The culture was a disaster. Who are you talking about?
I guess
he'd be talking about Stone.
No, but didn't I? This is exactly what I brought up to you in the break. I read that and I was like, which team are they talking about?
Either one.
Because again, they were both mirror images of each other. They were both absolute bleep shows. It could have been either one.
I think that's why they're both great coaches, because they have similar personalities. 2738, I think it's harder to control a smaller locker room because the majority is negatively affected faster. Okay, but the counterpoint to that is you have to control more whenever you have a bigger mm-hmm. locker room. So I think there's pros and cons to both, and I think it's probably a wash at the end of the day.
Because the thing is that in the smaller locker room, it's just you and the players, and yeah, to your assistants to some degree. When you talk about the NFL, you have a massive staff of coaches, almost as great as half your roster of players that you are in charge of on both sides. It is a massive undertaking when you talk to coaches about just running your coaches' meetings and overseeing everything with your coaches, let alone a full roster and everything you got to do on the football field.
2228, Udoka got a team to the finals he didn't build. The team was already good. How much team building is Udoka and DeMeco doing right now, though? Like, that's given the coach a lot of credit, maybe for some general manager duties.
No doubt.
We don't know. We don't know. Like, we're not in those walls. We don't know how much Udoka has control of the roster, and the same thing for DeMeco.
This is also one of those – this is also the living proof of when people say coaches really don't matter all that much in professional sports. When you look at what these two coaches have had to endure, what they've had to dig out of, and what they have to be responsible for, and then – not just responsible for like Steven Silas, but being responsible for making sure that it's being done the right way. And the development is happening with the players, and the wins are coming with them, and the way that they're playing is a certain way, and the way they're carrying themselves. For anybody that doesn't think that coaches matter, and I guess baseball is the biggest argument for, like, they, you know, people say, well, maybe they get 5 games difference for you in a season. But you're discounting the fact that it's not just the games themselves. It's the practice habits. It's the disciplinaries. It's the locker room. It's everything like that. But especially in football and basketball, Houston, I don't think they really understand how lucky they've been to get these two guys when they needed them most.
8143, Ryans did more with less.
I don't know about that.
I don't know if that's the case.
Yeah, the Rockets won 22 games last year.
Yeah.
And you know what season. We didn't know? A whole lot going into this season, where now we're talking about Alpie. We're talking about Green. We're talking about Amen Thompson. We're talking about the development of all these guys and the potential in the future. We were wondering if there was any future going into this season with the Rockets.
6-5-1-7 have to finish out season to decide who's better out of the two. See, I disagree with this because, again, you're talking about the guy as the coach, not their resume. So, like, how the Rockets finish out the rest of the year doesn't change my mind on how good of a coach I think Ime Udoka is.
Because
guy's looking at it from a results-based point of view, where I'm looking at it as coaching chops. How the Rockets play over the final few games isn't going to change my opinion of what I think is Ime Udoka.
Well, the only way it would is if they went back to iso ball and
it
became unwatchable. Right, I don't either, but to your point, though, the only way that could possibly happen where you think they took a step back and it would change your opinion is if they just started to play like they played under Silas.
Yeah. 8835, DeMeco eats garden sauce as sun chips. Well, they should fire him. 6517, Udoka wouldn't be able to contain himself around Hannah McNair. I have no idea what that means.
Oh, I do.
55, I'm kidding.
I know.
5595, I'm just glad we finally have what seems like two great coaches for the near future.
Oh, but to the point on the one about Hannah. Is it fair, though, that we weigh in the off the field? Because you don't see DeMeco ever doing anything even remotely close to that. DeMeco's never going to embarrass you off the field.
Ime has not embarrassed you so far,
but he's done it in his career to where at least you have to keep that in your mind.
I don't think it matters for coaching chops. I think it's certainly something that's going to follow Ime around.
Well, we say that, like, with Deshaun playing, being an unbelievable
football
player.
No, it's part of his story.
But, yeah, it definitely affects everyone.
I don't think it's affected the Rockets.
No, but I'm saying, like, Deshaun, no matter how good a quarterback he was, it affected the organization, the city, the reputation.
Yeah, but that stain happened when he was in Houston. Like, if Adoka were to do that again in Houston, now it's a problem. But it's not a problem yet.
No, but as an owner, it does. It creeps into your mind when you're hiring him, and then that you know that this dude has, you know, his past, very recent past, has had some issues. Whereas with D'Amico, it's a no-brainer when you hired him after talking to him and knowing what you know about him.
Yeah, I think you're making something out of nothing.
No, but I'm asking you the question: does the off the floor, off the field,
not once you make the decision to hire him. Like, because you do all of that stuff before you hire him. Once you make the decision to hire him, you've told yourself you're good with that. Now, if it pops up again, then you got to get rid of him.
But we just talked about it, too. I forget which maybe it was with the baseball contracts and things. You still have to have done your due diligence enough to know that you're hiring a guy in which he's had a hiccup that has been very public and was ugly, that you have to put into the...
Well, we're talking about Wander Franco, but he didn't have that background.
No, but, but I'm saying as it relates to, like, hiring anybody. You have to do your due diligence enough to realize, hey, this is a one-time thing. It was this and this. You know more details than we do. It's not going to happen again.
Right.
But in the back of your mind, you're still going.
Well, I think once you make the decision, though, you're pot committed. Like, you make that decision in pre-production. You don't make that decision in production or post-production. 50-10, we didn't think Tiger was going to do anything like that, and then he did. We didn't think Deshaun was. We didn't think that Wander was. A lot of these things that happen are usually random. Now there are guys who like repeat offenders, stuff like that. But when you make the decision to give a guy a second chance, you've made the decision before you ever hire him.
It's you know, whether it's an addiction or whatever, there's plenty of teams that have made the commitment to guys that have had drug and alcohol history, saying, well, he's over it now. It's never going to happen again. It happens again.
713-780-ESPN, HRNP listener line, 713-780-3776. Who's going to lead the Astros in strikeouts? And who's going to lead the Astros in reliever ERA? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Look, it's that time of year. We're talking a lot about basketball, college level, pro level. It doesn't matter. It's that time of year where we're jonesing for some hoops. And you're probably jonesing to shoot some hoops. And if you're going to shoot some hoops, you should be shooting hoops with Pro Dunk Hoops. They make the highest quality basketball goals you'll ever find. You're not going to find anything like this in the big box stores. Tempered glass backboard, breakaway rim, stainless steel hardware, and it's height adjustable, anywhere from 5 feet to 10 feet. And with their new goal, Thor, you can raise and lower the goals with a drill. Lightning adjust feature, 5 to 10 feet in a matter of seconds. Easy, fun to do. Idiot proof for guys like you and me. And their accessories are next level too. LED light kits for night play. You work, kids are in school, you can't play till the night. We'll get an LED light kit. Don't have to worry about that. Backstop nets, pull pad lettering, lots more. And you can order everything, including professional installation online. Yes, the pros at ProDunk Hoops will professionally install your goal at the perfect height, perfectly straight. You don't do a thing. Let the pros at ProDunk Hoops do all of the work for you. Give them a call at 281-351-9822 and visit ProDunk.com. That's ProDunk.com.
You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ocho said that... I didn't realize that Ocho was a 70-year-old woman. He said he just finished Red Jello at Luby's.
Red Jello at Luby's?
I didn't realize the Luby's were still around.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're still open.
Yeah, there's still a few. Yeah, there's one in Kingwood right near...
the one on the highway?
Yeah, Kingwood and North Park.
That one's
open.
Still there?
Yeah, it's still
the
open.
The one off of Gray and...
there used to be one right at the corner of...
I think that one closed.
There was one at the corner of Post Oak and San Felipe that was actually...
Are the Bats back?
Under the bridge?
On Wall? Because I remember they went away, like, I think a lot of them died during the freeze.
I have no idea.
Are the Wall Bats back? 713-780-3776.
Is Claiborne still open?
Because I want to go. I want to take the kids, but I don't know if they're around.
That's a good question.
Well, if you're ever out in Austin, they have a great bat bridge.
Do they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just look it up. There's bat tours. They'll take you out in a boat and right before sunset, and the bats always fly out, like, at a certain time.
That was
time.
The same thing with the Wall Bridge.
Yeah, if you're ever in Austin, they've got a great bat tour.
Is there any crap that smells good?
No, but I mean, like, when you can't get rid of them, like, our neighbors in Midtown, their townhouse, had, like, hundreds of bats in their attic. They weren't aware of it.
Yeah.
When they went up there and just opened the attic door,
Ooh. There's a guy that you know. I don't want to blast him on air. Yeah. He got a bat stuck in his attic. It, like, flew into a hole into his attic. It was stuck there.
It died?
I don't know.
That would stink.
Well, if it couldn't get out, I imagine it did die.
That would stink too.
Literally and
more. Yeah, more ways than one.
All right, let's get to our Astros prediction. Who's going to lead the Astros in strikeouts this year? Dang it, I'm not ready. I'm first here.
You're not ready.
No, I forgot to do some prep during the break. Last year, you look at the Houston Astros and you look at who led the guys in strikeouts among the team. At the very top of the list was Fromber. I have two guys in mind, but I'm kind of heavy on the other guy. I'll just go chalk here. I'll go Framber Valdez to lead the Astros in strikeouts.
I mean, it makes sense. He's going to give you He's going to give you the most innings.
I think so. I hope so. If he doesn't, then something's wrong.
Something is very wrong if he doesn't give you the most innings. So if he goes the most innings, he's got he's got the odds-on favorite to lead you in strikeouts.
Yeah, just go ahead and give me Framber. I'll sign up for Framber. Blankers?
Man, I just don't think... I think Javier's strikeouts are – it's between two guys for me. I think Javier has got his velocity back. I think Javier is going to be the guy that's going to get back to when that high fastball is very much untouchable. And though he's not going to pitch as many innings, I think that he's going to have good – I'll go Javier.
Yeah, I was hoping you were going to say Verlander so I could take Javier.
No.
You're leaving me a bad spot because I don't want to go Verlander with the unknown he's going to miss. You know what? I'm going to go a little bit off the board. I'm going to go Hunter Brown.
Off the board?
Off the board. That's the one he and I were both thinking.
I almost took him first.
Why didn't you take him then?
Because I think Fromber's chalk, and I'm already heavy Hunter Brown. I'm heavy Hunter Brown in this game.
If you want to switch, I will gladly switch and take Fromber.
No, well, I'm not switching. I drafted Fromber because I'm heavy Hunter Brown.
Yeah, I think I don't have, obviously, the injury concerns of Hunter Brown, and I think he goes 150-plus innings. He's got the nice strikeout ratio. What? Because
good. I said I'm heavy Hunter Brown. He goes, I don't think you look like Hunter Brown. I don't know why I giggled at that, but I did.
Yeah.
All right, so you got Hunter Brown. I like the pick. I think it's great value there at three. All right.
His stuff translates to being a guy that if he just has a decent year, he's going to give you strikeouts.
Yeah, I'm bullish on Hunter Brown.
No
but again,
question.
I'm heavy Hunter Brown. I have him in tons of best balls, too. All right, reliever ERA, minimum 40 games. We're not going to do innings because innings can be kind of, absurd games, I guess.
Especially
we're going to 40 appearances.
Especially for a reliever.
Minimum 40 appearances. Blankers has the first pick here. It's good because there's three options.
There really is. I'll go with Josh Hader.
I just get to sit back here and wait to see who y'all don't
pick.
That
makes my pick fairly easy. I'm going to go Brian Abreu.
I love Brian Abreu. My favorite reliever.
It was a two-person pick for numbers. Me.
Hader's hard to argue with Abreu's numbers.
That's true.
You know, actually, this might be a clear-cut two instead of a clear-cut three.
That's what I was thinking. To me, it was either Hader or Abreu, no questions asked. And so, with Joel taking Hader, then it was pretty much I had to put my answer of Abreu in.
Four.
Nope.
That's the biggest question.
I would probably go chalk and say Montero. Just
the fastball?
He was good in the second half. And these other guys are like mysterious guys that we don't know how they're going to play or pitch. If Hader and Abreu are the clear-cut top two relievers... Is the wrong guy pitching the eighth inning? You know what? That's another topic for tomorrow. We'll save that. I'm going Presley. Just give me Ryan Presley. Really good reliever. I don't think I'm going to win this one, but I'm picking third, so I got to do with whatever's left. All right. So that is that. We'll do a couple more of these tomorrow. What are you laughing at?
Someone responded. I think Jeremy Pena will lead the team in strikeouts.
Well played.
Very well played.
I'm a Jeremy Pena stan, but it's well played. All right, 713-780-ESPN HRMP listener line. What are we nominating for today's car wreck of the day? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN
92.5. You all right?
My leg is broken. The bone's coming through.
You prick! Where's my money?
This is the car wreck of the day.
What are we nominated for the car wreck of the day? 713-780-ESPN HRMP listener line. I'm nominating these voters in the Killer Bees Fight Club bracket for picking old man Lopez over me. Idiots.
I'm disgusted by that, actually, myself.
Car wreck of the day. What are you nominating for car wreck of the day, Blankers?
I think the easy one is the official last night in the U of H game that called that jump ball. I don't know his name. I don't care to know his name. I just feel like in that situation and what happened was brutal and almost cost the Cougs a chance to advance.
Touche. I like that one. 0835 NFL hip tackle ban for car wreck. A lot of people have texted this one in, and it was at the top of my list as well. Shohei Ohtani. He answered questions today. No, I'm sorry.
No,
I read
that
wrong.
He did not answer
questions. Gave a statement today, but did not answer questions. Right. Did I also read this right? That he didn't allow cameras in this thing?
Well, he had to have, because I'm seeing video.
Okay.
Maybe there was not still photography. I don't know about that, but there is video.
What does that matter?
Video of it. I don't know. Like, if it's just another...
What's done is done. We don't care what you look like now.
Well, if he didn't allow it,
maybe
I think
he's
it's a
worried
bad
about,
look.
Yeah. Maybe he's worried about body language.
But I must have... it's clear I read that wrong, because
yeah.
You're watching video. So let's strike that from the record. What do they yell? Objection, Your Honor. Let's strike that from the court.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's strike that. So we'll strike that. What were some of the, did he say anything of significance Shohei? I think it's soft he didn't answer questions, by the way.
He flatly denied, in a quote, saying, I never bet on baseball or any other sports or never have asked someone to do so on my behalf. So that was a flat denial. The other quotes that I have a bigger problem with, because it doesn't jive with what we saw with Shohei and his former interpreter in the Seoul Korea series last week. There's two quotes on this. Ipe has been stealing money from my account and telling lies. A later quote, I'm very saddened and shocked that someone who I trusted has done this. From the timeline we know of these events, Shohei would have known that by the time they were in Korea, and he brought him to Korea, hadn't fired him yet, and they were laughing together in the dugout. I'm not buying those quotes at all.
In January.
He might not have known about it in January, though.
Right, not in January.
But based on his comments, when do you think he knows about it?
Before Korea.
How's he giggling with a guy who stole $4.5 million from him?
Because we know Ipe, basically, either right before game one of that series or right after game one of that series, told the entire Dodgers, you know,
it was
clubhouse.
After game one.
It was after. You're telling me Shohei didn't know it during game one that after game one Ipe was about to tell him this?
This is so staged.
Did he tell Shohei at the same time that he told Mookie Betts that, oh, I've stole $4.5 million from
him? I believe Shohei. Psych.
The final quote's the one that kills me, too, because he said he never bet on baseball or other sports or have asked somebody to do it for me or never been through a bookmaker or never assisted anyone betting or making payments for anyone else. $1 million in January was taken out of your accounts, wired, and there's only less than a handful of people in most cases, no matter how much money you make, that have access to, and you would know. I would know if I don't care how much money I've made in my life. I would know if I wired someone $1 million.
Some people are just dumb with money. Like, I've seen them try to play the dumb card with Shohei, that he just doesn't know about money, doesn't pay attention to money, which, like, okay, like, I'm with you, like, I would know. Maybe some people are just don't care about that, especially guys who have tons of money and unlimited resources and they, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, like, I can buy that to an extent, not really, but to an extent, maybe it's plausible. But how in the world does your interpreter have your wire information?
Yeah, especially as a married man. Like, I mean, it's weird to the it'd be weird for the interpreter to have it no matter what.
Before game one in Korea.
No, that's true, yeah.
Yeah, the timeline here doesn't add up, man. Like, the timeline here does not add up at all.
You can't tell me these quotes about, you know, about Ipe that I read earlier in the segment, how that jives up with what we saw in
Especially
Korea.
You had that one. Who was the one guy who came out with a statement and then lied and changed it an hour later?
Well, like, that was Ipe.
No. It wasn't the interpreter. There was, like, another guy, I thought.
Well, Ipe originally came out and said that Shohei paid the money on his behalf to cover his gambling debts to ESPN, and then later...
Yeah, they allowed him a 90-minute interview with an ESPN reporter, and then shortly after the interview was done,
his people called
ESPN up and said, scrap all that, that's not true, he's stole from us, he's lying, this is that.
This sounds like a huge cover-up.
Well, of course it is, because the reason why Ipe would have to change his story, because if Shohei paid an illegal bookmaker money to cover up his buddy's gambling debts, then by MLB rule, he's violated their rule. Because it doesn't matter, even if it wasn't on baseball, if you paid money towards an illegal bookmaker, then you are violating MLB rules and you're violating federal laws.
He didn't realize that was against Major League Baseball rules. And then somebody wisened him up to it, said it is against Major League Baseball rules. Okay, Ipe, how much is it going to cost for us to make you the fall guy? Blank check.
Here, $20 million,
$50 million, $100 million.
The Chris Carter playbook.
I would do this if I'm Ipe. I would absolutely do that. How much would it cost you to be the fall guy for Shohei Ohtani?
What's
the minimum you would take?
I would take $5 million.
If there's, I guess if there's you would prison know that, time though. Involved, right? But you got to start trying to factor that in. Am I going to do time, or am I just going to take the fine?
Prison time certainly raises it, but assuming I'm not doing prison time, $5 million.
This guy says interpreter had access to Otani's phone. I don't have my wire information on my phone.
No, you should.
Yeah, exactly. What is he Venmoing $500,000? Come on.
What a Venmo. Does Venmo have a maximum amount? Let me check.
Come on.
Let me check real quick. Timeline doesn't add up here. This to me, best case scenario for my conspiracy theory is that Ipe bet. He covered up the $4.5 million. And maybe Ipe was telling the truth at the beginning.
I believe Ipe's original story was,
which I still have my doubts.
They were so close, though, for so long, and they both said how great of friends they were, that there's, I believe that Otani, at the very least, he knew about all this, and he was trying to bail him out.
Yeah, I believe Ipe's original story. I believe exactly kind of what we talked about. He went out and told the truth, and the lawyers were like, whoa. You're admitting to Shohei breeding both Major League Baseball rules and federal laws. We got to change the story.
But I could also believe that Shohei was betting and Ipe was
his mediator. That is possible.
In the process as
that
well.
That is possible.
50-30 wire information's on bank account apps. But as a guy who doesn't care about money, does he even have these bank accounts on his apps? I don't know.
He's probably paying
so
somebody
much information here.
Doing that.
What a weird
but
deal.
But no matter what you're paying someone to do for you, you shouldn't have them. They should not have the power and authority to wire money in your name.
In total, Arlington says Kim Mulkey.
The Jontay Porter one is the one that gets me. Jontay Porter's with the Raptors, and he's being investigated right now for betting on himself in prop bets in NBA games.
I don't care if he's betting on himself.
No, because then he bet all the unders so that they wouldn't.
That's not great.
And then he pulled out of games with injuries in those games.
I don't think it's fair to put Kim Mulkey on here. She's entitled to her side of the story just as much as the author's entitled to his title of the story.
Yeah, that's total Dallas. He's total Arlington. He doesn't count. I'm talking about what
them,
I said.
Both of them have a... Brian, did you have one?
SEC basketball. I don't think it was a great opening weekend for them. Got 8 teams in the tournament, only 2 the Sweet 16, including Kentucky and Auburn flaming out in round 1.
Who's winning? Who's our car wreck of the day?
The official that called the jump ball.
It's going to be Shohei, right?
I'm going Shohei. Cougars were over to overcome that. If they lost, though, then different story. So Shohei Ohtani, congratulations, car wreck of the day. Mostly for not taking questions. I wonder why. Because you want a very specific story.
You want a lead.
You want everybody to have. All right, does it for us. Thanks to Brian. He's Blank. I'm Brad, and we'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. Glenn Davis, Soccer Matters. He'll be talking all about the CONCACAF Nations League with the USA victory 2-0. That's next.